here is to, sorry. Okay. So we're trying to look at, you know, the CC problem and come up with a natural solution for it. So I'm just going to sort of briefly give you kind of an outline of the talk, and then also try to describe quickly what sort of things actually going on here. So first of all, I'm just going to go over some motivation behind the Kosmolcher-Constant problem, which probably doesn't need much motivation, but I'm going to do it anyways because you never really know. And then I'm going to give you our solution for the solving the Kosmolcher-Constant problem, and then sort of discuss those points, and then go on and discuss some future work that could be sort of done and really sort of nail this down. So the devaluation is a mechanism for sort of getting from some large positive Kosmolcher constant to some small Kosmolcher constant, which is on the order of what we observe. And I'm just going to roughly write two things on the board to sort of, where would people like me to write roughly, on this side or that side? I'm going to do this side because it has a light. And my mic is continually falling off. This is also not very good. Is there something to race with? Oh, sorry. Great. It's a movie. Oh, this thing moves. All right. So I can. Oh, I see. I can just keep going up. I don't even need. I don't need a racer. But I have to. No, it's completely, it doesn't, it's stuck. I'm not going to be able to do that. I mean, maybe there's a button. Is there a button you push? I don't know. But now you see I pushed it all the way up and I have no chalk, so I have to pull one of these down again. It's not very good. So I think I'm just going to write a couple things on the board, and this is something very important to remember. First of all, so we start from the universe. So this is a domain wall network solution to the Kosmolcher constant problem. So you end up having, so there are a couple important things in this scenario. You're always radiation dominated or matter dominated. So you're never going to be vacuum dominated, nor are you going to be dominated by wall tension and stuff like that. And so there's no tunneling. No. No, because if you have, let's say, so I guess you maybe we're going too quick. Why don't I explain what's going on here? So if I have, let's say I have a potential that's like this, you know, many minima. I have radiation. If my radiation is large enough, then I'm not going to see any of these minima. As I cool down, I'm going to fall into these various minima. And then if I translate this into a picture of the world, of the universe, different regions, let's take this one as x1, and I'll take this as 2. And I'm going to divide, let's say, one particular Hubble volume into these two different sections. And this is going to be, this one is here. And 2 will be here. And that as my horizon grows, because there's an energy difference between these two different states, this domain wall is going to be pushed into that region, such that after a period of time, you're only going to have one region left, which is just that, which will be the lower Kosmolcher constant. So this is the basic sort of setup and scenario that we have. And we're going to try to explain how we can naturally sort of, maybe you can imagine that this is the Kosmolcher constant.
First and start expanding first, right?
So the assumption is so there's some initial conditions, which is initially you do have a positive Kosmolcher constant, but you're still a radiation dominated.
Yeah.
And then initially you can sort of search out your potential, and you get sort of you can pick in any particular spot in the universe. You can sort of have the various different Kosmolcher constants. But after the universe cools, the domain walls form, and then you're sort of stuck with that kind of Kosmolcher. You're still a radiation dominated, and you're not tension dominated.
There's some kind of scalar field that's cool.
decoupled from
the right. So we mark this up as some axion in field.
That was not getting at itself.
So the temperature of the scalar field is or is not related to the current.
So the temperature is related to the density of the universe. There's your radiation dimension, right? So H is going to be just an 18 to the 4, right? More or less about that. So that's the point, you're radiation dominated. I mean, of course, you know, you're also going to have a lambda.
Okay.
Right. Plus you'll have, you know, a term that's going to come from your tension on the domain wall and stuff. So you have other terms there. But these are going to be subdominant compared to your temperature radiation. Okay.
So the scalar field that makes these domain walls has a characteristic tension that's small enough that they don't form. That these domain walls do not form until
you've gone through all the various phase transitions, right? Because every time you go through a phase transition, you produce a new constant. So that was just quickly to give you an idea of where I'm going, so you're not. So my introduction doesn't get boring. I think this is a boring talk. But I'm going to tell you that we can get basically to a very small cosmological constant through this mechanism in fairly fast time, and then we have some arguments about why you don't go below. You don't go very much smaller than a small cosmological constant. So just to sort of point this out, so you know, in reality. I would say that the motivation behind the question about the cosmological constant really comes from back to GR. So if you remember, I guess I wrote this backwards, but if you look at the bottom, here's your Einstein. You know, here's the Einstein equation, right? And you know, generically, you can have a lambda term, right? Lambda Gemini, or I'm just going to call that lambda bear. But you can generate other terms. Vacuum energy tensor, which is going to come from other terms, and from the point end, for example, the electroweak field, or from some sort of spontaneous symmetry breaking. So even though maybe you set this value to be zero, you can regenerate cosmological constant through these other mechanisms. Or if you want a very small cosmological constant like you have today, then you would say that I would have to sort of cancel these sort of terms such that lambda effective is basically very small, right? So this is the cosmological constant problem. And just to make this more explicit, so your zero point energy, again, is just a summation of various modes up to some cutoff, which is going to be dependent upon, very appropriate, you have a hockey stick that makes you cancel that. So lambda M Planck, you know, you could have it as gravity, or maybe for electron, you should say that your natural cutoff is electroweak scale instead. So then in principle, electroweak scale, you would end up having a cosmological constant, which goes like that. And again, let's say at very high energies, let's take another example where you can generate cosmological constant is from spontaneous symmetry breaking, for example, electroweak theory. So we have the Higgs mechanism, which is that phi naught takes on a non-zero value and just masses to all of our guys in the universe, right? And so lambda phi is like this. So maybe let's suppose that lambda M Planck, I set this value to zero, so I'm sitting very happily at zero constant. But at some point, as I go through electroweak symmetry breaking, I then generate a negative cosmological constant that's here. That roughly goes like u squared 4 pi t. Still going to be quite large compared to the observed cosmological constant. So these two mechanisms, even if somehow miraculously at very high energies, let's say you know that you should have no cosmological constant, low energy physics, which has nothing to do with gravity, will again regenerate a cosmological constant, which then becomes interesting. So this really is the crux, that even if you really understand very high energy physics, we understand quantum gravity in great wonderful detail. The fact is that we still have this issue, something that's completely divorced from quantum gravity, which introduces something that's phenomenological for us. That's kind of a clear argument. So I think then this kind of poses some questions about what are some sort of possible solutions. So something which has historically been around for long. It's one possible solution is you have a compensating field whose vacuum energy sort of dynamically adjusts to cancel the large value of the cosmological constant, or various new sort of, let's say I generate a new cosmological constant, I want to dynamically get rid of that value again. So that seems sensible. So our dynamical solution, again, is involving this post-inflation period evolution of domain walls. So we go through a period of inflation, and then we subsequently go in this period of devaluation. I just realized, one second. So there are a few requirements for devaluation. One is that you need a sufficiently rich potential with nearly degenerate minimum, spanning a range of both negative and positive vacuum energies. So you can kind of model that on sort of a tilted cosine as we have here. So historically, I think that this is something that's there have been other solutions to the Kosmological Constant problem. And other dynamical solutions. So one, for example, is sort of Abbott's tunneling model, which is very similar to the potential that I drew on the board, except that the actual height of these barriers are on the order of 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. And energy differences, is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts to the fourth power, where roughly the height for the devaluation, these things are on the order of a few MeV up to a few GeV. So you can see that the energy schemes are slightly different. And in that case, in Abbott's model, it's sort of a tunneling process that gets you to a small cosmological constant. I'll get to that in a moment. I'm just making a quick comment about that. And sort of an updated version of that was Baum and Teitelbaum, and then also Busa-Polchinski and Wilczek and Mark Russell. All are sort of compensating fields which tunnel. And I think, as you can see, there's sort of various problems with the various models, from no reheating, empty universe type problem, to too slow, which is similar to that, or an anthropic type problem. Right? So I don't know if you consider entropy a problem or not, but assuming you don't want to use anthropic arguments to get a small cosmological constant. So devaluation sort of really consists of two or more fields. So there's an inflaton field, and then there's a devaluton field. So the inflaton rolling or tunneling field, as it says, ends at a positive vacuum energy and leading to reheating of the universe, which is radiation dominated. And there's a second field, the devaluton, which is a compensating field. So there's some compensation which comes into, you can imagine an inflaton field, you start at positive energy. And then the second field comes in and again would adjust as you get driven to a smaller cosmological constant, which again we model on this sort of tilted cosine. So you can imagine a cosine on top of a devaluation field. We could imagine sort of a cosine on top of a cosine type field, and we end exploring just kind of this reddish region, right? So we have some conditions that force you into this region, and also some conditions that determine the height and the energy splitting between the various minima. So again, this kind of just reiterates what I said previously. Again, you have two different regions. One has a larger and one has a smaller cosmological constant, which provides a pressure upon that wall, which drives away the region with a larger cosmological constant. And we find that you might think that you get driven to smaller and smaller cosmological constant, therefore you would happily get driven into negative cosmological constant, and furthermore, very negative cosmological constant. But we find that there exists a cutoff such that the main walls can only drive you to only so small of a negative cosmological constant. So if you're sitting at some positive cosmological constant, then after a period of time, you only drop to a very small cosmological constant.
Because you say you don't tunnel, so these regions, you don't create new regions, so you just move into each other, right?
Right, that's right.
So Okay, so you have the same number of lambdas that you started with. Just mm-hmm. change the ratio of the volume. Right. Then how do you want to measure it right? So that it doesn't really change the Kazantzakis constant problem.
You can say, if I say globally in space and I ask what's plots, you know, if I pick some average part of the universe and I say after a period of time, what is the average cosmological constant?
How do you want to find an average part of the universe? Because you want a volume average?
Even if the universe is heated, so I have H is defined by my temperature, so I have a well-defined horizon, right? And after a period of time, my horizon is growing. And pick any particular horizon space, and you say, I have a domain wall there. You know, is it moving relative to that volume that I picked? And that, you know, that wall will be moving very fast towards the region of the large cosmological constant in the finite time, which will just sweep away that large cosmological constant. Does that make sense?
It does. I just, the volume averaging, that's the part, I think this is kind of guessing the same anthropic game, that you have to somehow define where is the typical and where is not the typical.
Well, the point is if your domain wall network goes away very quickly, then there isn't really anything anthropic about that, because it's the regions that would be left would be exponentially small. Right, so if I let's say, you know, in a typical domain wall network, if I throw down a domain wall network, let's just say, you know, maybe I should get on because I can kind of address this further in the talk. But
when the radiation temperature starts to drop off, then some of these cosmological constant parts that are very small start to become vacuum dominated.
Large.
Well, the point is that those regions, before they become vacuum dominated, are swept away. The point is the dynamics of the wall is faster than the time scale at which you would become radiation dominated. Mm-hmm. So if you had initially large cosmological constant, the time scale between a wall sweeping you away and seeing a cosmological constant is smaller. So at any point in time, let's say you start with a large negative cosmological constant, you're guaranteed that there's going to be a wall that sweeps away your cosmological constant and you get a smaller cosmological constant. And this process continues as the horizon continues to grow.
That is not an assumption. You didn't mean to just assume that there's a, so that's just an upper, so that gives an upper limit to your model of how large the largest vacuum.
You're reheating, so assume that you're, assume you reheat, right? That tells you what is the large, let's assume you can reheat to let's say 100 GeV, then that would tell you the largest cosmological constant you would have, which is 100 GeV. So, and in that region, then you would form a domain wall, and then you would. So even in that case, you're still radiation dominated, and you find that your domain wall is large enough. I mean, it's such that the domain wall will evolve faster than the time. So, assuming that the cosmological constant you have is of the same scale as your temperature, and that you form a domain wall at that time, that domain wall will be swept away before you will become vacuum dominated.
So the temperature which this happens is around the really
easy. Well, I mean, in principle, you could do this at all different scales. And in principle, I could do this at higher scales as lower scales. But we picked everything to be on the order of NEV type scale. So we have a way to sort of get to
NEV. Little NEV or big NEV?
10 NEV. Is that bigger? Little
mega electron volt.
Mega electron. So I'm going to make this more concrete as I go along. I mean, I'm just trying to get some initial setup here.
Can I add one thing to the horizon?
Sure.
In one horizon size, you have a huge number of little regions.
Right. So a given cosmological constant is going to be set upon like your Ginsburg temperature. So it's roughly goes.
This is still your introduction, right?
Yeah, I'm still not even there yet.
Go on.
But at least there's interest, you know. I mean, you could just be sitting here and not listening or whatever. So I'm going to kind of continue reiterating stuff that I've already said. So again, this kind of example is this V of inflation, and it could be either a rolling or a tunneling field. And so the only requirements upon the inflation, sufficient inflation reheating, details are irrelevant as long as valid potential then inflation is greater than 10 V. And then we have such that our final sort of evaluation field then removes this last 10 MeV. So the way to sort of get this natural setup such that I can sort of only have 10 MeV at the end to sort of worry about is one of the nice things about chain inflation. So this is another model. This is a different model, which has nothing to do with the cosmological constant, but is a model of inflation, which again has a very similar looking potential, mainly a tilted cosine, except that the values of the energy difference between the different minima are an order of 10 MeV and are sort of comparable to the height such that you have a very fast tunneling. And so in this sort of chain inflation model, you again have many you have many sort of minima that you then tunnel through in this particular case. And that, again, because you have this sort of tilted type cosine, that some of your corrections to your cosmological constant will be absorbed by your chain inflation potential, because again, if I introduce a new sort of cosmological constant, it just shifts this particular potential up and down, such that there's always some vacuum energy which is very close to zero. So part of the cosmological constant is adjusted for with the chain inflation potential, and then you're at the end of the day, you're only left with sort of 10 MeV that you have to work there down to zero. And so you might wonder how does this actually work? Why is there a cutoff? Why don't you actually just keep tunneling into zero? There's two reasons. One, Coleman-DeLucia, which is gravity does notice zero, and that gravity can suppress your cosmological tunneling rate into an ADS region. And secondly, there's this Aphthalac-DeLucia. So at the end of inflation, we will become dominated by thermal energy. And once that happens, your thermal bath can dramatically suppress your tunneling rate. So I can, for a period of time, as long as I'm radiation dominated, not tunnel in the chain inflation potential into a negative cosmological constant. And I guess I'm just going to repeat myself and say that you are, let's say, stuck at 10 MeV, and now I still have to get rid of that 10 MeV of cosmological constant, which is going to be due to this devalued Tom field. Sure.
In common, the lookup is for air bubbles, right? And yours air bubbles, right?
No, actually, that's untrue. So Coleman-DeLucia is, he solves this for a general potential, but then he takes the case where he wants to, the calculation he presents in his particular model is a thin wall limit.
Sure, it's a thin wall limit.
So if you're going to be tunneling fast, you're not going to be in thin wall.
Okay.
So we're not in thin wall, and you have to then sort of go through and solve that equation explicitly. And then find what are the exact parameters. You won't be suppressed in terms of your tunneling in that case.
Okay. So the second argument, the general lasting, that does still
that does stop, yeah. So it's a two-bit part. So it's a question of if you really want to go into this. So the argument would be, let's say so we have more chalkboards, I guess. See, I should have actually So you're right. Let's say I'm going to be tunneling fast. All right, so this is the initial picture, negative cosmological constant. I mean, this is the phi. This is phi, right? So you're right. I would say the question is, if I had no radiation, I would then sort of tunnel down into sort of region. But I can sort of, with devaluation, adjust this such that this will then become my zero will be very, very, as long as when this value becomes very, very close to zero, then your tunneling becomes dramatically suppressed due to the cosmological constant. So as long as this value is small and I have to tunnel into a large negative cosmological constant, then the gravity does become sufficient to suppress any sort of.
You're talking
about
chain inflation or
devaluation? This is chain inflation. So you're asking me, why don't I tunnel? Why does gravity not stop me? So if my true cosmological constant that I see is small here, even then I won't tunnel route the way here. But if instead, let's say, my cosmic function constant was there, and this was a sort of large enough value, then I could tunnel.
But why would this be so small?
Because of devaluation.
Okay, so
and as long as you're radiation dominated, you can't tunnel anyways. So the point is, as long as you can adjust this potential to a small value, then you will never tunnel with that.
So you want the evaluation
answer, and no, chain inflation works, and then it stops, right? So you stop at some value here. But now you have radiation, so you can go in an orthogonal direction, right? So the devalued atomic field is an orthogonal direction relative to this vector field.
So evaluation does not require any particular model of inflation before it, does it matter?
But chain inflation apparently requires devaluation, otherwise you can't have data.
Well, you could argue this is
function model.
No. I could instead just assume that the potential that I end at is that V not that I end with a very small positive cosmological constant. In that case, I don't. The reality is true for any inflationary model. Why do I pick the end of inflation to be a pretty small cosmological constant? That's just saying we don't believe we have to worry about the cosmological constant problem. It's true of any inflationary model.
So, but I'm still confused. So the chain inflation tumbles you down this washboard thing. But in general, you could get to some finite large value above zero. And you said somehow that devaluation is supposed to shrink that to be tiny.
Right. So
have you told us yet how it does that?
That was this domain wall picture that I drew earlier. And I will explain more carefully exactly how domain wall network can drive you to a small positive cosmic.
So, but you have all these regions with different lambdas. Aren't these walls all going to crash into each other?
Well, they're driven towards regions of larger cosmological constants. So if I'm sitting here with a large cosmological constant, the other side of the world has a smaller cosmological constant, and there is by definition a domain wall between us, that domain wall is going to come sweeping towards me, and will just sweep past me, and then I'm going to get a smaller cosmological constant. The assumption is that I don't feel the wall either. The wall will just sweep right through, which is not unreasonable for sort of axionic type potentials that we're using. So there's two fields here. Again, one is an initial inflaton field. Again, I agree with it. Does not have to be sort of, you don't have to have this chain model, but it sort of naturally gives you, you know, a cosmological constant, which is not very big, and then you can adjust this again. So in some ways, this is a nice model in that sense. The chain inflation is that it's sort of plus devaluation that you can both get inflation without sort of and get a small cosmological constant, which isn't put in there by hand.
So when should we think about like the last wall leaving our horizon point?
I'll get to that actually. It's further. It's one of the sort of requirements we have to put upon the field. So to sort of let's go back to the compensating field. So there are a couple of sort of requirements upon those. One is at the top is the potential. And the first potential gives you the big cosine, and the second one gives you, actually it's the other way around, gives you the little cosine. The energy difference is going to be set by the observed cosmological constant, which is 10 to the minus 3. And the barrier height, because we, again, going through the symmetry breaking arguments, has to be under, let's say, 100 GeV, such that if I get a correction, which is coming, again, from my electro weak sector, that I can then compensate that for within this particular potential. And then you can sort of translate this into sort of parameters of my domain walls in the different regions that I have. So the barrier height is going to be connected to the mass times this value, mu squared divided by the number of bumps that I have, and my sigma again is going to be related to m and the mass and mu, and my energy splitting again will be sort of fit by this parameter. So if I know what the energy and the sigma have to be such that this thing can evolve in an interesting manner, that then sort of sets the parameters of my field, or conversely the other way around.
Cosines, I'm having trouble reading.
Yeah,
but they look different.
I realize that.
Are they supposed to be or not?
No, they're supposed to be the same. Sorry about that. I'll correct that. I'll put the little handle up there.
On the right hand side, too.
Oh, it is on there, isn't it? Oh, yeah, right, sorry. Yeah, well, I'm dyslexic, so this is my excuse for all things mistakes like that. Probably makes difficulties for my collaborators at times. She always has to remember that I mean the opposite of what I mean, but only sometimes. So I wrote down a random potential, maybe some, but you might ask, how do I actually sort of, if I'm claiming this is a natural argument, then I should argue that the potential I have is natural in some manner. So one sort of natural field is you know, the sort of field symmetry where phi can go sort of phi plus some constant. This is equivalent to sort of an axion there for a moduli type field. So you might have like a U1 type symmetry. Through some sort of soft symmetry breaking in one scale, like I get my I get a Mexican hat, right? And then I can couple this to a gauge group, which sort of through the Petri-Quinn mechanism will again break this U1 into some sort of Zn type symmetry. So you can sort of think of a Mexican hat with various little bumps on it, right? And then, but that's a degenerate minima, right? So I now have to tilt this so that I get that sort of second cosine. So we add a second soft breaking term by hand. I mean, in principle, we could, you know, maybe do this by introducing a coupling to another field. But it's small in sort of the natural technical sense because the sort of corrections are only logarithmic things higher than that. So that's why this is a technically natural potential. From a field theory perspective, right? And so then result, after you took that potential, after you generate the potential in the first place due to the coupling to this gauge group, and then you add the second soft breaking term, you end up getting the potential precisely that I showed previously, where you have these very sort of bumps, and the height difference is 2 times eta. So this is the tilt and potential different minima have different energies ranging from eta minus to plus, which is sort of, you know, if you took again a hat and you tilted it, that's the distance from traveling from here up to here again, right? So now that I have my potential, now I can sort of ask sort of what conditions do I have to put upon my sort of, to reiterate, what sort of things do I need? So one thing is that my eta is going to be larger than the sort of potential at the end of inflation. So we had set that to be 10 MeV. So this ensures that the vacuum state stays near zero. And also ensures that it doesn't go over the top. Well, one argument would be is that you also want to, that QCD can have an electroweak breaking phase in principle. And so you could then also associate a coupling constant, which is going to be associated with QCD phase. So in principle, you'd want to be underneath your QCD phase to actually do that. I think the second reason why is that when we actually put in the numbers to sort of match cosmological constraints, that you sort of, that this is a nice value. Yeah. I mean, at some level, it's you know, you don't need 10 to the 120 bumps, right? So if you took M Planck and you divide that by 10 to the minus 3 EV, then you get 120, 10 to the 120, right? So now you only need about 10 to the 10 bumps because you're only going from 10 MeV down to 10 to the minus 3 EV. So it's kind of, it sort of simplifies the sort of scenario. And again, also sort of protects you against the spontaneous symmetry breaking that you might have during QCD phase. So that's sort of ensure that you're there. There's a second condition, which I guess is really apparent, but you want your energy to be, energy difference between any of these particular minima to be small, because we're just assuming that, again, if you take your tilted cosine potential and you shift it around, that roughly, if it's going to be natural, it's just going to be on average the energy difference between any particular minima in your system.
multiple that is statistically has many ups as downs relative to lambda equals zero with these tiny little increments. I mean, this cosine does it, but it could be anything.
Basically. Yeah, but you want to make sure. I mean, I'd be happy to write down any potential. The problem is again, we want to make sure that if I write down a potential, it's technically natural, right? So I want to ensure that I'm not the first reason why I start worrying about writing down this field in the first place is I wanted to ensure that sort of quantum mechanical corrections to my vacuum energy aren't going to throw me off. And so I want to have a field which can absorb some of those corrections, right, that gives it this dynamical effect. And also that I want to ensure that the properties of that field are not strings themselves. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why we wrote down the field. So I mean, in principle, I guess you could write down a more general field. I just don't know how to do it.
Yeah, but that's really what this does for you, from what I can see.
Yeah,
it's cosine. I mean, it's nice you can write it down, but it doesn't have to be a cosine. It could be anything that does this.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. But I still think you'd end up having to do these sort of arguments if you want to make it a natural argument. So. Again, so to sort of reiterate, go back to this picture, another sort of thing you need is to make sure that your initial energy is larger than your barrier heights, right? Because you want to explore out various regions, right? So we have some region which is going to have the right cosmological constant, and that region is going to grow and subsume the whole universe. That's kind of the basic argument behind that. And maybe I should just reiterate again, there's no tunneling, but maybe that's apparent from this potential. One way to see that is you have a relatively large barrier height, which is going to be on the order of MeV scale, and the energy difference between any of your two minima are going to be 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. So your probability of tunneling is very, very suppressed in that case. So again, the universe then falls into these different patches. I think I drew this picture earlier on the wall. And you'll have one region will be minimum 1, another region is minimum 2. And if the energy of minimum 1 is larger than, when I say energy, I mean the vacuum energy, domain walls move to eliminate the higher energy minima from the large minima.
A very ignorant question.
Okay.
This would happen also in cosmic space, for instance.
Cosmic rays?
In cosmic space, you don't have to be in
a cosmic Sure, that you have this pressure effect, that's right.
So, but doesn't this contradict the conservation of energy somehow? Because
well, the radius, so there's the timing, this time scale, which actually determines at what time scale the domain wall eliminates the higher region, is actually not completely just dependent upon it. It changes. So if you have a large cosmological constant, the radius of the wall can be much smaller, and will start driving away the process. So if I'm stuck in a region with a large cosmological constant, because of the sitter space will warp the nature of my wall and the sort of area of my wall, it gives it such that I don't need as large of a wall to be able to sort of have this process where it starts driving away the region with a larger cosmological constant. And I'll show you.
So this is the dynamics of this kind of field, right? I don't need the gravity anything. It's just that I put the action of this kind of field.
So I can ask a very simple question, which is, okay, so I have this, which gives me the energy difference between these.
Yeah.
So I can translate this into, I can ask, what is, in terms of general relativity, what are the interesting features of this? There are a couple
things. The question is just, where is all the energy of the high energy?
Oh,
where is it going?
It goes into the wall, right?
Yeah, but then the wall disappears.
No, the wall expands, right? So it has... I mean, and so if I do this in a very sort of simple calculation, so if I ignore gravity for the moment, how do I conserve energy, right? It's roughly that my volume, so it has some volume, and there's an energy difference. So the energy difference is epsilon, right? And domain wall has tension sigma, right? So in flat space time, if I want to balance the amount of energy I have in this region, I can take... 4 pi thirds times r, where r is the radius of my domain wall. So assuming this is a circular domain wall, that's r. Right? So this is a third times epsilon, is then just going to be 4 pi
sigma r squared, right? So as long as, so if you rewrite this, there's an r critical at which, when it's larger than r, when r is larger than r critical, which is going to be set, r critical will be just set to be equal to, let's see if I can do this math, is going to be 3 times sigma over epsilon, right? So at that point, once it's larger than that, as this thing expands out, the energy will just go into the momentum of the wall. So if it's larger than this sort of given amount, it will sort of continue to expand out. Well, conversely, if it's below this sort of radius, the energy is in the opposite direction, and that would drive it to want to collapse. So the interesting thing is that when you, if I add in a cosmic constant, radius critical changes. So if I'm in a large cosmic, let's say if I have a large cosmic constant, my r critical will be shrunk that I need to be at. And so roughly, if I have a domain wall, which is of the scale of my horizon, so rc of the wall, actually that's a bad notation of r, is on the order of the Hubble volume, or the Hubble size, that wall then will be driven away.
And at some point they will collide, wouldn't they?
So this is, again, the Kibble method. I guess at some level they would, right? I mean, if you have some sort of global picture of walls. You know, the thing is when you think of like the Kibble mechanism, you actually have a large, let me see if I address this more carefully in this talk. Okay, so I'm gonna say some more about this and then say that there's a lot more work to be done to actually understand the exact dynamics that are going on. Well, first of all, there's a couple things we know. First of all, the symmetry that I wrote down is a U1 symmetry, and that then tells me about the nature of my domain wall network. So it's interesting, let's say instead my underlying symmetry group was instead, let's say, a non-abelian group, then I can actually have my domain wall network. In that case, for non-abelian, I can have cross-fields. So let's say I have some sort of four-point symmetry here, then I can actually have a region that will have four-point symmetry, or I can also have a domain wall that has these sort of junctions, right? But because I have a U1 symmetry, there's only two types of walls that I can form. I can form infinitely long walls, so in my volume, or I can form closed walls. So these regions that have closed walls will go away. They're smaller than this value, are critical, so these things will shrink. And then you're just going to be left with a large domain wall sort of spread across.
So if they're larger, they're going to expand, right? So some of them.
Well, they're infinitely large walls.
Yeah, sure. But so some of them will shrink, but some of them will expand.
Round ones.
Closed ones. Will go out away, but otherwise, these are only two type things. You have no junction conditions or anything.
Yeah, but the ones that expand.
No, but they're big, if they're big enough, they'll blow out. That's what he's saying.
Blow out, what do you mean?
They expand. You just said that.
No, it's an infinite. No, they'll be driven in a direction.
Closed ones will expand.
Closed ones will expand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where this is a small cosmological constant, this is a bigger cosmological constant. So in this case, again, this would be driven out of that.
So they could collide.
That's what I was saying before. You could have two lower energy regions that are big, and they'll smash into each other, and you'll get all kinds of crashing.
However, you want this mechanism to take, on average, every space, 10 to the 5 space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This doesn't have to be crossed over by 10 to the 5 walls.
I agree with that. For any particular region, but initial condition, you know, you assume what would set my initial correlation length would be, let's say, roughly my Ginsburg temperature. So they're going to have a huge number of these particular regions within a Hubble horizon, and so I haven't gone through in detail to figure out exactly what the relations are on this But, well, fine, I mean, you get collisions, but still you would be driven to regions with smaller energy. I don't know.
But you might have other constraints that come from energy release. especially if you inject lots of.
Look, again, it depends on the type of couple. I mean, part of also the assumption is that the stuff is not really, it's part of why these things accelerate fast is they really don't couple to us, right? So in fact, if it's an axionic type process, it would be you're producing stuff which wouldn't really interact with us, right? Because axions are very coupled. So this is continuation, depending upon the particle physics model you write down, will tell you sort of, even if you have sort of interesting dynamics going on, you can shuttle that away, making it very non-interacting.
Maybe I'm thinking about this too naively, but I just think about the situation of the single wall, mm-hmm. the horizon. So my horizon boundary is
growing.
Yeah, and it's growing. It's growing along with the. Mm-hmm. So if I want to push a wall outside of that horizon, do I need to make that wall go faster than my?
No, because it's not my horizon's not growing at the speed of light, right? It's growing at the speed of. It's growing at h. Right,
that's physically it is. That's faster than.
Right.
So okay. Faster than.
No, but you're right. But the amount of stuff that you okay. The yeah, but your visible horizon is growing at the speed of light, right?
So if I just take my causal horizon.
My causal horizon, yeah.
So then. That's growing like basically single component. I'm like some number which is greater than 1 times c squared. That's holding
c times t. It's the time of the rate at which my.
Or if you think about the pulse of light, there.
Well, I mean, by definition, I mean you can't pulse of light can't leave your horizon, right?
Exactly. So it's right on the boundary. If I imagine setting up a flash bulb.
So this
your
okay.
horizon.
Right.
You want to push your domain wall.
My domain wall is headed towards my horizon, right?
Yep.
And as my horizon is growing, I'm going to see new space. So I'll see new regions as it's growing. Which are
you never lose that wall.
Yeah. But the amount of domain wall that you have is going to be if you look at the volume that makes up your space, that's going to be stuck in the region that's your domain wall versus your actual space is going to be less, right? Because the rope as the region, let's say, I mean, this is a generic problem of any domain wall system, right? Let's say I have QCD. So this is a classic problem of QCD, which is that if in QCD you have, again, very similar to the potential that we have. You know, if you want to solve the problem of the strong CP problem in QCD, you introduce an axiom. So an interesting thing about axions are that you go and if this was true, you would have the same domain wall network problem. In principle, these things will also be degenerate, and you again provide a sort of explicit breaking, which then provides this pressure against your domain walls. So if you're at any point in space, I mean the question is if I'm sitting here, where is my domain wall? It's not sitting. You know, in the center of my space-time, it's being pushed away. So that as my energy is dropping, it's not going to be dominating the energy density of my volume that I'm actually
getting. Still doesn't decide.
Okay. So you point that if I have enough walls that space will be invaded by enough. Get close to today's problem, there will still be domain walls with the top horizon.
But this is true for any domain wall network.
Not by top horizon, just dynamical mechanism. These domain walls are hiding for all of space. You can create many of them. So that all the space.
They're always at the boundary of your space time.
So what I still don't understand is it seems like you assume that the wall does. No way you can just outside of
you. You still have it.
But it means that I always have some region of. It means that I never have a region of. Because all the walls I start out with, all the walls.
Yeah. But only those, the regions that will have
So you pick any particular point in space, there's a larger bubble that comes, and that wall will sweep past. Assuming that these things are moving exponentially fast, then the rate at which this thing evolves is very fast. No, I'm sorry. What I mean is, if I take a volume of my space and I say, how much of that space is in, let's say I could write down the amount of that space.
So around the higher energy.
So the number. So I'm just saying that if I take some space and I ask what is the probability of this region being in this large constant, I'm just saying that if I let the system evolve, that those regions never, in principle, go away. If I have an infinitely large domain wall swept away, it's just that the filling volume of that space is going to be suppressed by that evolution. It's moving exponentially. That's all I mean. Well, but I'm just saying it's very suppressed. Maybe. It would be anthropic for them to be in a large house, which doesn't make any sense. I guess we could all go there.
And the final thing is, huge number of domain balls. All those tensions are too small to have any observation.
Basically, yes. And we can mock. We do use that to sort of determine what are the properties of this domain wall. Because that will determine what sigma has. And partly this goes back to why we took 10 and b, because if you want to get a sigma which can be within the observational bounds, then we need that's a recessive.
The observational bounds on the main wall tension is having a large barrier between vacuum that you need to suppress.
Well, large relative to 10 to the minus 3. But not large compared to cosmological populations. I could say more about this in a minute. I think I have.
Sorry, is there the 100 GeV?
100 GeV, because I have to be below that for electric beam. So.
But you're saying the barrier is itself.
Well, the barrier is there, assuming that the time scale, let's say that this, it depends upon the time scale for this thing to evolve. So let's say that my upper limit in terms of my time evolution. I still need to be radiation and matter dominant. So if I'm going to observe, we can observe stuff from the radiation and matter documentation of the universe. And if I have a domain wall that's still evolving at a time scale, then that would you'll find that you have there's this little rich effect, right? So if I go across potential, that will redshift or blue shift my photons. So there's a large domain wall here. Then half the sky would be redshift relative to the blue shift, and you can see this up to some sort of scale, and that's recessive. So we're assuming that somehow this thing can evolve to a very late time, and in that case, you would towards late times, then you can have you potentially have this because you have a large main wall, large wall.
Seems like all the pushing is going on. It's got to happen really late in cosmic history when. The energy density due to everything else except for these very degenerate kind of cosmological constants is negligible.
Well, I mean, I think maybe I should just say a few things about this. Maybe it's just, again, I think that I agree. This is my reiteration point, which is these are sort of dynamical processes, and you can say, well, are these sort of interesting things in sort of limiting development? And people have done simulations where, this is a separate point that I'm going to make, but I'm going to say that people have done simulation where you have a domain wall network with an energy difference. So let's say I take. So let's take a famous quartic potential, which is like that, and let's introduce a small bias. That, so there's an energy difference, epsilon.
And then I can go through the sort of same argument, and I then instead of just, you know, not having 10 to the 10 vacuum states, I have 2 vacuum states, which is all completely different problem. But nonetheless, I then can sort of throw down different regions, we'll have these different values. I can then just evolve the sort of system through. And very quickly, you can drive this thing to you can drive away the domain hole network in the sort of volume filling argument that people talk about.
I guess.
So the question is, if you repeat this for 10 to 10 minima, you know, would this exact sort of thing happen? And I'm not sure about that.
I guess it seems reasonable, but there's just this competition, right? Because if you just have that, then all that matters is that one energy difference, right?
Plus the cosmological constant. So if you vary the cosmological constant, the time scale which this happens would change also because of this argument.
Sure, okay. But kind of the more energy you added, like you sort of, if you have like this energy difference, which is like today's cosmological constant,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a really high energy density and radiation power relative to it,
mm-hmm.
it seems like the sort of fractional difference in expansion rates is going to be very small. Kind of like roughly like the ratio between that today's cosmological.
I'm just saying that if once my wall has gotten flat enough, then the thing that drives this domain wall is just going to be this value that I had, which is this energy difference relative to sigma value. So I tell you about the producer of your wall. If I have a perfectly flat wall, and if I had a perfectly flat wall, then the tension would be unimportant in terms of driving the dynamics of that. And that thing would just be driven away.
What would be important is the difference in energy between the two?
It's a set of pressure, right. But if you have a perfectly flat wall, then that pressure will just drive away. You're not fighting against the tension.
Yeah, but it'll drive it away, that's slow.
No, it will accelerate it. It's going for energy conservation, right? The amount of energy that goes into that wall, that energy has to go into the energy of that wall, which then will accelerate it. And within, I don't know, I forget these simulations where they do that, the amount of time scale from going from there to be very fast is relatively good, especially if this has no friction, meaning it doesn't interact with matter and stuff like that, or very briefly. So I think the question is, does this sort of domain wall network sort of evolve quickly enough to get down to a small cosmological constant and sort of an interesting time? If it was only 2 minima, I would say yes, it's not a problem. But 10 to the 10 minima, I think, becomes a qualitatively different problem. And it's something we are working on. We're trying to do a simulation with, did I put it up here? No, this is the next slide. Oh, was it? Okay, it was the previous one. So we're doing a simulation with Palisanos. So I would also just, I'm going to briefly say something about that there's another bias that could happen, which is that statistically, if you have regions that have slightly higher probability of being more probable, so let's say even if I don't have an energy difference, so you have degenerate domain wall network, so the energy here is constant, it's the same in both, right? Well, let's say I have slightly higher probability on the order of 10 to the minus 8, and I'll be in this guy rather than that guy, plus region versus the minus region. Then very quickly, as your universe cools from 100 GeV down to 10 MeV, your domain will never be driven away also. So this is due to percolation theory, which I don't really understand really well. But roughly that will take you to these things apart. So that's another aspect. And you can ask, so you can then say, well, why is this an entry mechanism for evaluation? You can argue that the statistical probability of being in any particular state is going to be relative to each other by the energy divided by your temperature. Right? Assuming this is a Boltzmann type of distribution. So that the regions with lower energies are going to be more probable than regions with larger energies. And so you'll have, again, statistical biasing on your role. The value time network, which could also drive the way of the domain network. So I think this is something we've been sort of focusing on, which is this domain wall evolution. Does this sort of evolve sufficiently fast? And I'm optimistic, maybe for no good reason except I'm an optimist. And
But then there's another serious issue, which is this EDS region. So the second point was is that I said that I have a domain wall network that drives me to a small cosmological constant. I have domain walls that sweep away regions of high cosmological constant, and I'm only left with smaller and smaller cosmological constant as a fractional filling of my entire global volume of space-time. And so sort of addressing the second issue, we have sort of a no-go postulate to ADS. And in the case of just vacuum energy, this no-go postulate has been proven. This is a relatively brilliant paper written many years ago by Marian Cvetic, which sort of shows exactly this sort of bound. So to prove it, what does one do? One sort of solves Einstein's equations for, you have two regions. So we're doing matching conditions. We solve for Einstein's conditions an arbitrary cosmological constant on one side, arbitrary cosmological constant on the other side, and then we match across that. And then we find sort of the matching conditions, and we discover three different types of walls. We have sweeping walls. We're not talking about streets here. And we have stable walls. And we have sort of double walls, which are interesting in the sense that if there is a domain wall between, this was a double wall, then it would seem to both of us that the wall, if there's a domain wall, on this first row here, it would seem that I would be moving away from you, that the domain wall is moving away from me. And that to you on the other side of the wall, it would seem that the domain wall is moving away from you as well. Right? Stable wall is, there would be a wall here, wouldn't be going anywhere. Sweeping wall is precisely what we're talking about most of the time, which is the main wall is moving in one direction rather than the other. So what determines determination of class of walls is you can sort of write this down into that sigma static is then defined in terms of is equal to 2 times alpha 1 plus alpha 2. And we're interested in the case where sigma is going to be less than sigma static, and that's the case of these sort of sweeping walls that we had earlier. So in that we can rewrite that previous formula that we had under the condition that sigma is less than sigma static. And then we can invert the potential. And then we find beta, which is roughly goes like 1 over the radius of your wall as a sort of interesting sort of solution where this is your domain wall sigma, that's your cosmological constant, and that's your epsilon, basically. And then from this sort of condition, these sort of things are fixed. Sigma is fixed. Epsilon is fixed. We can then find a condition at which this is a minimum bound. So setting B equal to 0, as I said, then I can sort of determine a cosmological constant one side plus cosmological one side other side minimum, which then roughly goes like this. So sigma squared times your energy difference squared divided by sigma squared. And we can set epsilon, because we know what that is from, it should be small, 10 to the minus 3, right? So that sets that. And then I can then sort of define what that minimum is, 10 to the minus 3, in terms of my domain wall tension and epsilon. So this then sets my sigma to be 10 to the 3. Right, so here's the energy density in the universe, and this is your cosmological constant, as we were talking about earlier. So under that argument, maybe I should say, let's see if I have more on this. So what's the picture behind this? So this is what I was talking about, why regions with large cosmological constant, the domain wall sweep faster. So if I do this matching condition, what is it actually? Am I solving for? In this sweeping picture, I'm really actually solving for the bounce solution for my domain wall. So this is a wall that starts at infinitely flat, and then collapses to a minimum radius, which is this radius set up here, and then expands back out again. So if I set what is my minimum radius of my wall before it starts expanding, that's RC, it will sort of hit that point and then expand out. So for a given cosmological horizon, which is going to be related to my energy in my rho vacuum, that then will determine what is that minimum radius. As our rho vacuum gets larger, my minimum radius gets smaller. So it's not like if I'm, originally I wrote down that RC, rho critical, where it starts going away, is just going to be related to 3 times sigma over epsilon. But in reality, there are other gravitational terms which sort of reduce this in the case where it's positive. So this becomes negative when you have a positive cosmological constant. And as I go to more negative regions, this then becomes positive. So then at some point, this value becomes infinite. And that's equivalent to the same cutoff that I have. Because it would say that if I have a wall that sort of can go form between regions that have a smaller cosmological constant than that, it has to be larger than, which is not very physical. And in some ways, this is similar to the same sort of bound that was found in Coleman de Lucia in terms of his arguments about not tunnel and JPS. So maybe I can sort of see this in a more heuristic argument. So I can.
Heuristic? How I say it.
Oh.
It's heuristic. So it's not heuristic. I don't know.
H-E-U.
H-E-U. Okay. Again, never mind. Okay. How much more time do I have? I'm sorry. I'm over. All right. Let me just. I didn't realize how much time I had. I should have asked that beforehand. Let me just make this last comment because, and then I'll just make my quick concluding remark. So again, sort of heuristically, you can think of that your total sort of gravitational potential. You can sort of describe it as rho plus 3 times p. And in the case of vacuum energy, rho is just minus p, right? And so that your energy density really is like a positive energy density, which is just like a mass. So normally you can think of a wall as something which, if you get close to it, moves away from you and has a sort of repulsive sort of gravitational effect. Well, mass has an attractive gravitational effect. And so if you're sitting on one side of a wall, you're going to say, what do I feel? You feel a repulsive effect which is coming from the wall, but you also feel an attractive effect that's coming from the ADS region. And at that boundary where you have a sort of infinite wall, those two sort of forces balance. And that can kind of be seen in the Coleman mass argument. So sort of to conclude, I would say that there's issues about this domain wall network driving dynamics. But in some simpler examples, it's been shown to be very effective in terms of getting a small cosmological constant, or rather driving one region to another. And in the second case, there is this cutoff in the case of vacuum energy, but this has only been done for two regions with only cosmological constant. So you have one cosmological constant on one side and another cosmological constant on the other. Obviously, this whole scenario was based upon the assumption that there's radiation problem. But assuming that this goes through, then we have actually a real mechanism that works that gives you a small cosmological constant, which is dynamical and has a universe which looks just like those. Okay, that's it.
Sure. You were talking about how you want us to tell us about mention and going to this potential.
Right.
And different places in a space, you end up in different
Right. So if you condense matter, right, you have the Ginsburg temperature, your correlation length. I'm probably going to screw this up, so don't hit me. Roughly goes like it's equal to 1 over your temperature minus temperature critical to some sort of alpha power, alpha, depending upon the condensed matter system you have. But let's say it's a positive number, which it generally is. So let's just take it as 1. So in a condensed matter system, you go through a phase transition, which is as T approaches T critical, then your correlation lengths go to infinity. Right? But away from that, then this sort of thing just scales from 1 over T. Right? So if your temperature is very high and you're not near your critical temperature, then your correlation length just goes like while your universe, right, as your temperature goes up, then the correlation goes. And so in reality, you look at the size of a region which versus correlation length. The correlation length is much shorter.
You want the correlation length at another place to be
smaller than the horizon.
Just smaller than your horizon. And in general, it's not a problem. And doesn't work also with KD free, so.
And you can always talk to KD.
Answering her question, the temperature initially is so high that you don't see this potential at all. So your value of the field could be anywhere. It could correspond to, you know, phi equals maybe 100 and whatever units you want. So you'll get some high energy. So, you know, it would correspond to over here, or you could be anywhere. So you'd be sampling. Your temperature is so high, you're sampling this whole potential. You don't give a damn about its existence. You don't know it's there.
And
then as the temperature drops to very high, all of a sudden you realize, oh, looky, I'm stuck here.
Right.
And he's stuck somewhere else. And there's a wall between us, and uh-oh, I'm dying. Right.
If they missed that with these.
People find it very confusing. Everyone thinks that you're sitting somewhere in the right level, but you're not.
Very
hard to explain.